tall, it gets a little better. I see the wall that we can break down together. Stand tall, it gets a little better.
Hi everyone, welcome to Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni. I'm looking forward to spending quality time with you today on Finding Your Voice on radio.dominican.edu. So come on in, let's talk.
Stand tall, it gets a little better. I see the wall that we can break down together. Stand strong, it gets a little better now.
Welcome to Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni. So glad to be here this Friday, the 19th of October, 2012. Today, I have a guest with me in the studio, and her name is Judith Strong Albert, and she is the author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women, and we'll be having a nice conversation with her about the topic of her book and also the seeds of inspiration of how this book got written for her. Let's just jump right on in. I'm going to introduce you to Judith Strong Albert. She is an independent scholar and has written numerous articles on education and women educators, and has been a teacher and writer for most of her adult life. Her 1976 dissertation led to her efforts to research and write Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. Judith, welcome to Finding Your Voice in radio.dominican.edu.
Many thanks.
Oh, so glad to have you in the studio today. We are at Dominican University. I'm studying for a degree in humanities with a minor in communications, therefore here I am on radio.dominican.edu. When I was looking at all of the credentials, somehow I missed what your degree is, but I know since you did your dissertation, you must have a degree.
All right. I got my doctorate in 1976 at St. Louis University, a very, very broad-minded Catholic college, and I had an advisor who was crazy for one of the 19th century men, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and I picked a 19th century less well-known woman at that point, Margaret Fuller, who was showing women in a series of conversations how to find their voices. Big change for women from being quiet and being told one way or the other to shut up to speaking out. And Fuller and her circle, a little bit before the mid-19th century, were gathered together in a bookshop owned by another one of the circle, Elizabeth Palmer Peabody.
This is like the salons of old.
That is right.
Where people were getting together and they were just having conversations.
That's correct.
And it didn't matter whether they had degrees or not. These were people who just wanted to think and talk philosophically.
Absolutely. And women in that day and age, you have to remember, didn't go to college. There were very, very few opportunities for them to get anything in the way of higher education. And in fact, most of the women in that circle were either tutored for their education, or they had a father who had a shelf of books so that they were able to start thinking about what was in those books.
They practically conducted their own education.
It was an autodidactic experience. And I think that would be going to the heart of the matter for those 19th century women.
This is DJ Noni here on Finding Your Voice. I'm here in the studio today with my guest, Judith Strong Albert, author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. This is radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back. This is radio.dominican.edu. This is DJ Noni here on Finding Your Voice. I'm here in the studio today with my guest, Judith Strong Albert, author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women.
I think that when you have the question, who was Margaret Fuller? If I were to say to you, who was Ralph Waldo Emerson, you would probably say, okay, 19th century essayist, writer, poet, everything. But at the time that Fuller was talking, mm-hmm. that name, Margaret Fuller, it didn't have a whole lot of resonance. And her circle were a little bit on the cutting edge, all of them. They belonged to a transcendental atmosphere. They had come through religious backgrounds, but they had also a Unitarian question in their heads about what was the purpose of their lives. And I think Fuller spent 6 seasons of conversations every winter talking with them and informing them and asking them, how do women name themselves?
So she was not only educating herself with all of her little bits of grabbing of information from all the different sources that were not necessarily available to all women. She was sharing all of that with other women.
That is right.
What were some of the names of the women that she was having in her circle?
Very good. Elizabeth Palmer Peabody is the American mother of the kindergarten.
Wow.
And she is very, very much responsible for progressive education and for the entire kindergarten movement for little kids. She thought women should professionally have the education that they need to be good mothers and good teachers of their children.
Great.
Another was Lydia Moriah Child, who is the most influential voice of civil and human rights in her time. The last person in that circle that I have dealt with, although the circle had about a dozen women in it, was Carolyn Wells Healy Dahl, who is not very well known today, but in her time was very much an advocate for women having an education, going to college, being allowed entry into the business world, and being informed of their legal rights. So what she did is wrote a series of essays responding to Margaret Fuller's very seminal essay, The Great Lawsuit, which I can talk about a little bit more, by writing College, Market, Court, a book that had everything to do with how Fuller's idea of naming oneself became a matter for going to school, being given the right to enter into businesses, and beginning to demand their place legally.
These 4 women, Fuller, Peabody, Child, and Dahl, were this core group in the circle that were looking at women's issues. This was the 19th century?
Yep, 1839 to 44 is the period for those conversations.
So they were paving the way for us to have more benefits than ever.
Indeed.
Indeed. When you were growing up, there was probably a thought about how women should be acting in the world and whether they should be going to school or not. What was that like for you? And clearly Fuller and her group paved the way for you. Tell me a little bit about your experience growing up and getting yourself educated.
It would have been World War II era, and I didn't really fall in love with education and learning until I was quite grown up. I'm afraid that I'm a Betty Friedan a person, because I really thought women grew up, you got married, you had children, maybe you joined a book club, I don't know. But there was that moment of learning for me in the 70s with the feminist movement. Also, while we're back on that subject of my education, both my parents were educators. My father, a professor, and my mother, a good pianist and a very bright graduate of good schools in the East Coast. So both my parents and my siblings and I had good opportunities. But the basic question of what's the use of an education didn't occur as part of that training, so that it was really in the mid-70s that I began to say, okay, what good is that education? And it led me to writing Minerva's Circle eventually.
Eventually. Now, you did your dissertation in 1976.
Correct.
And you graduated with your doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
But the book came out in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So there...
You're doing the math.
I'm doing the math. I do go to Dominican University of California, so I can do math. I'd like to talk to you about what went on in that period of time in your life. So let's take a little bit of a break, and then we'll come back to that and talk about women's issues, balancing career and academia and family, and how it relates to Margaret Fuller and how it relates to you. Is that good?
Yep.
Shall we do that?
Very good.
I'm here in the studio today with my guest, Judith Strong Albert, author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. And this is DJ Noni here on Finding Your Voice. And here is a really great song, speaking of women's issues, by an artist named Estelle. And this is called Speak Your Mind. This is radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back.
Well, I say, the business. I'm nice in my skin, I love every color. I got the body God gave me, don't want another. Well, I'm woman, it don't matter the shade. And what you really, really want is a lady that's paid. Paid on that terms, want this ditzy, ditzy. Take these look good girls and miss me. Cause half of y'all would have lost a minute in my circle. Shade in a minute, watch them curdle. And this is not an attack at them. I just want them to do better than they're doing with their men. I just want them to aim high, stop their gripping and their grins. I just want them to pull out the miseducation again. It's crucial times and we're here to base it. I gotta tell the truth, y'all face it. All you have to do is speak your mind.
Welcome back to Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni. I'm here in the studio today with author Judith Strong Albert, and she's the writer of the book Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. Margaret Fuller was a woman who was around in the 19th century, and she gathered a group of women together to do some philosophical thinking about women and what their voices meant and who they were and how they had to really carve out a place for themselves. And Judith Strong Albert has done that in her life. She got her doctorate in 1976 from St. Louis University. And when she did her dissertation in 1976, she was inspired by Margaret Fuller's story and wrote her dissertation on Margaret Fuller, but then said, you know, I think I need to write more and write this book. But the book did not get published until 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some time between 1976 and 2010. So tell me a little bit about your journey and how that feathers in to the concept of women having to balance career, family, and academia. Can they have it all? Is it logical? What was your path and how did Margaret Fuller inspire you?
Well, first of all, I did exactly what Betty Friedan would say was the no-no. I married. I had, with my wonderful husband, three kids who are now grown and have kids of their own. And early on, I think I was very lucky because my husband encouraged me to go back to school. When our kids were growing up, I was interested in education because of them. And one thing led to another, so my master's degree at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, because we were in St. Louis at that point, where my husband was teaching at Washington University, was in early childhood education. And I was fascinated by what children could or couldn't learn, and why, and who was teaching them. So I became a teacher. of little kids for a while. But I had this wish the whole time that there would be some understanding for me of what lay beyond that segment of my life, as well as theirs. And given the chance in the sort of mid-70s, I went back for my doctorate. And I had an advisor at that point who was a total marvelous person who helped me find Margaret Fuller, because she became the subject of my dissertation all by herself. And the fact was that she had been a teacher before she gave those wonderful Boston conversations. So I wanted to know, how had she taught kids? And definitely it was not in the rod and ruler tradition. It was definitely not in the sit down and be quiet tradition of earlier 19th century schools, which were fairly abominable. And she taught at a private school called the Green Street School, and she tried especially hard with young women who sat in a row at the Green Street School and either fell in love with her or were intimidated by her, but they definitely got some inkling, some very strong understanding of what lay ahead for them if they started thinking, which is great. So let's see.
Well, it sounds like you allowed yourself to start thinking, and it doesn't sound like, from how you described it, that you asked your husband permission to go to school.
Hardly. He was forcing me out of the house because I wanted more, to learn more. And the fun of it started actually when I had finished that dissertation, because I had the last chapters of that dissertation had to do with the conversations. The feminist movement and the conversations came together for me as a real powerhouse, not simply the abstraction of an education, but the application of it for women especially. So it was very important at that point to pick up the cudgels where I had left them. I had started writing about educators in that time and place, including Bronson Alcott, the father of Louisa May Alcott, other people who were teaching children alternatively rather than traditionally. And I decided that I would take each of the women who had some basic hold on what was happening with Margaret to understand their girlhoods, their falling in love or not falling in love, which is one of the questions you're sort of worrying about, and I worried about, and take each of those people, those women, and concentrate on them. So that is where 25 years went, because it took, I knew a tremendous amount about Margaret, but I did not know enough about Elizabeth Peabody. I didn't know how critical it was to know that even though she had only been there for one season, having Moriah Child, very important civil rights person there, and having this little upstart, Carolyn Healy, at that point, there. So I began to say, okay, let's find out what they wrote, and let's find out how the fields of education for children, empowering women as mothers, tying that to civil rights for Native Americans, Black Americans, because remember, this is a fairly white era when the white women were the more educated. The whole system of the tier of social difficulty for all women had to be addressed, but these women had to do it from the get-go, ground up, without...
Right, and they had to start it. They had to at least start somewhere.
That is right.
To open it up.
Exactly.
It sounds like you recognize that writing only about Margaret Fuller would not tell the whole story, and that you really had to find out who were her co-thinkers, so
that
to speak.
That is right. Exactly, and I think that that circle... The whole idea of the book is really how expanding that circle is. It's like dropping a rock in a pond and watching the circles generate off that particular drop.
And we can feel the ripples today.
My generation, I think, cut it for your generation.
Oh, yes.
So without the feminist movement of the 70s and the anger and the real frustration of women coming to the fore. One of the things that I've been thinking about when I was writing a little note or two about today was that it's an irony that women have come from a private, closeted life in the 19th century to get their voices publicly out there at the end of the 19th century through the 20th century. And at the end of this 20th century, the women who are their successors, who include wonderful historians and writers, they are now back to being able to be talking about their private, internal, psychological lives because of the transmission or the growth from closet private to public to back to psychologically saying who you are and writing it, which is astonishing.
Stepping up and speaking out.
Stepping up and speaking out and using their voices.
Using their voices, and you described earlier about finding out who you are. Really, it's the search for who we are, and we can do that in the middle of everything and be valued for it.
Absolutely.
It isn't just, you know, a side dish, so to speak.
That's correct.
Women, the main dish.
Mm-hmm. Women are the main dish. And I also think that sort of anticipates the idea that after the feminist anger comes this very important next step, which is the reconciliation and understanding through equity that women have as much of a voice as men. And it may not be the same voice. It may be specifically female.
One of the things that I think about when you say that is, how can women and men coexist without one pushing the other down?
Yeah.
It's a rough question. I don't know if it's answerable, but I don't want to denigrate men. I think men are valuable. They're smart. They are powerful. But I also believe that about women as well, and I wouldn't want to bring one up and discount the other.
That is exactly why those conversations have great significance still. And I think probably, without belaboring the point, the momentum that has given us the equity that we have now, which leads us to have people like Candy Crowley moderating and saying, okay, you may be the president or you may be the governor, but here's the question. And having her seize her own capability. And I think probably that is the gift of the feminist movement, which we have struggled so long and different. 300 years it has taken women to come from being
seen and not heard.
Absolutely.
Just like children.
Very well, women were considered very much to be the children. I guess the word is patriarchal.
Yeah.
And patriarchy is a tough one because it is subtle. The glass ceiling, the whole idea of disparity, financially especially, economics for women. If the last question is, how do women learn, what do they do with that education? They have got to understand that Virginia Woolf was right, even if she was English. and she was saying, you know, women need a room of their own, and they need £500 a year. How you earn that money has to come from something that you are doing that your education enables you to do. So I know it's a difficult problem, because women still in female and male classes, co-ed, sit quietly and are much more, possibly much more, I think it's becoming less more, content to let the men in the class have the last call. And that, I think women have learned now, they have to call. They have to speak.
They have to speak up.
Yeah, that's what your program is about, voices.
Finding your voice. Well, I love what you said about Candy Crowley being there at the debate, you know, talking with and to Obama and Romney.
Yeah.
And at one point, stepping up and fact-checking right there in real time, mm-hmm. and not just wilting over, like you were just saying, when you're in a co-ed class, you know, the women may sit back and, you know, defer. In this particular case, she did not. I think that was excellent role modeling for young women these days.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell that the media took her to task for it, or at least some of the media took her to task, as if you're supposed to stay within the boundaries of the moderator's position.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have, both sexes have the obligation to speak out. They really do.
They do.
And the more we have a conversation that is not confrontational, the better it is for both sexes.
Right, and both sexes need to speak out and also not apologize for it. And I think that she really held up under any scrutiny that came out and said, you know, I'm the moderator and this is what my job was. So she didn't apologize for doing the fact checking, and I think that was a very important aspect of her job, is mm-hmm. to just get up there and out. And anyone that's going to be public speaking or doing that kind of job is going to get criticized and slammed, and, you know, every detail is going to be pulled apart. But she held it together.
And so did the wonderful moderator of the vice presidential debate. And realize, Crowley is the first woman in 20 years, is that what they say, to have moderated? Why has it, you know, 20 years, let alone the 300 that I'm
right.
talking about?
Right. It was Martha Raddatz, by the way, that was doing the
That's
vice presidential.
Right. Her last name got lost there. But she also had a voice.
Yes.
And she knew how she was going to use it.
I think that what you and I are saying right now about these women right there out in front of everyone, bringing this process along, is very valuable. We're coming up into an election that is, all elections are crucial, but this one seems to be ramped up for mm-hmm. all the many reasons. And having women in the forefront, bringing the process along, I think is incredibly valuable. And it shows men and women what growth we've all gone through. And it's due to women like Margaret Fuller, but it's also due to women like you, mm-hmm. Judith, for illuminating Margaret Fuller's story and, you know, bringing the circle to life.
Well, I think that's a nice thing of you to say. And I think it's also why, germinally, that is what inspired me to write this book. And it went through several iterations. Right now, the way it will remain is the balance between being a mother and being a businesswoman is still iffy. It is difficult. And the decision when you're in school is to be really weighed. How do you make your education work for you so that you can have your family if you really want one? But some women may not want one, and that's equally valid in this day and age.
There is a new movie that is out, and it is called Brave. And it's an animated movie, and it is about a young woman who doesn't want to get married, and she wants to run her life the way that she wants to run her life.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't yet seen it, But here you are talking about women having choices about who they are, how they are heard, and how they operate.
Very much.
In the world.
Very much. And I think I was reminded when you were talking about that movie of so many novels of the mid to late 19th century into the 20th that have this dilemma, you know, why are you programmed the way you're programmed? And I think that is a very constant thing for your students who are in a classroom and who are reading a great deal of material to decide what value it really has for them individually, as also voice of many, many, many voices, because it's a cumulative voice that is women's history, just as it has been a very decidedly cumulative voice that has determined until this century what was constitutionally thought of as human history, which was men's perspective on all of it. So women coming out with books and getting a chance to speak, and in fact demanding a chance to speak, that is where we are. Minerva, remember, is Athena, the goddess of wisdom. And she was a powerful person, and Fuller had the reputation for being a Minerva. Mm-hmm. So, and she also understood the Greek myths very, very well, because she had a father who drummed them right into her.
Right.
So not a mother, but a father who drummed them into her, although her mother was also a teacher. And that leads me to say that also Elizabeth Palmer Peabody's parents were teachers. Lydia Maria Child, unfortunately, had an early death with her mother and a father who sort of didn't know how to perform for her. So she kind of was the little last orphan of the Francis family, the Lydia Maria Francis Child. And Carolyn Healy Dahl had an overbearing, overpowering father who, I think, really made her very anxious about what her place was. Also, while we're talking about mothers and that circle, had that little inner circle, only very, very few offspring in an era where women were producing babies like nobody's business. And if you didn't have 7 or 8, you weren't falling in line with Victoria's mandate. So Margaret had no children. She had one baby. Oh, that's a whole other story. She had a child, but that unfortunate death of Fuller at the age of 40, coming back to the U.S. from Italy aboard an ill-fated ship, she was lost. Her mate was lost. Her baby was lost. So no children grew up with Margaret and Giovanni Dosoli, who was her husband. Elizabeth Palmer Peabody had no children, although her two sisters married the two men that might have made it good for her to have children. Carolyn Healy Dahl had 2, but an estranged marriage and difficult motherhood. She really couldn't put herself either to be the mother image or emancipated. I mean, it was so much harder for women in that day and age than it is now to put it together.
Well, I would like to say then, since we lost Margaret Fuller at too early of an age, and we lost her mate and her child, that your writing of this book, and anyone else who is illuminating Margaret Fuller, that we are her children.
That's a nice way to put it.
And that we can look at her as our mother, and that she is there watching over us and doing what great mothers do, and that is speaking up for our rights, encircling us with their love and pushing us forward to not just laze around and let things, you know, fall at our feet, but actually make things happen and speak out on behalf of women, but also on behalf of everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure that she would have been a very tolerant mother. She had a very powerful voice,
oh,
and she wanted it to be understood, that it was speaking for all women. But I think she might have been a little frightening as a teacher. I've read some of her student accounts, and they loved her, but they were also
a little bit afraid.
Because she was so unusual.
Well, she was unusual and formidable. My guest here in the studio is Judith Strong Albert. She is the author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. And we are having a great time talking about women's voices. I'm going to play a song now that was from my childhood. I could not help, Judith. I had to bring this song because when I was growing up, I listened to it again and again and again. Helen Reddy's I Am Woman. You are listening to Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni on radio.dominican.edu. Let's take a little bit of a listen to Helen Reddy, and then we'll be back in a few moments.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend, 'cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor, no one's ever gonna keep me down again, whoa.
You are listening to radio.dominican.edu, and this is DJ Noni, and you're here with me on Finding Your Voice. Today, I have in the studio with me Judith Strong Albert, author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. And this book is about a woman, Margaret Fuller, who brought women together to share their voices with one another and with the world in the late 19th century. And during the break, Judith and I were talking about how things didn't just end when the 19th century ended, but these voices have threads that came through to your generation, Judith, then to mine. Mm-hmm. And now we're sitting here in the radio station at Dominican University of California talking to the next generation and sharing with them that these women have spoken up on their behalf and we want them to keep going forward with it. What would you have to say to the women of this next generation about those voices and the threads of those voices with their economic earning power and their autonomy as women?
Well, I think that is the answer as well as the question. And I think it does revert back to how you decide as a student to divide your time, because obviously the humanities are an invitation to understand the past, present, and anticipate, if not work on the future. But you also have schools of business, schools of law, medicine. I think all of those places which it has taken us a tremendous amount of time to come to be part of our lives, that is where how you decide to tailor your education leads you along a path. And believe me, it is a path that the more you can contribute financially to your own self, the better. Because money and women have always been a problem, and part of the poverty of thinking has been poverty of pocketbook. I'm working on a memoir, which is also a fictional memoir, of my mother's education and how their lives have had some penetration into mine. That's a generational kind of thing. My mother's headmistress was a very powerful woman whose father died when she was starting school at the Radcliffe, it's Harvard again, but it was called the Annex, and Annie Ware Windsor was a student who it took her something like 9 years on and off without the help of her father, whose money was the family money, to finish her schooling and to establish a school of her own. And my mother's education in the 20s at that school was incredible. It was a school called the Roger Ascham School, and Roger Ascham was Queen Elizabeth I's tutor. Mm. So obviously Annie Ware Windsor Allen founded the school and was the headmistress. She really wanted her students to have a rounded education, and I think my mother got that. However, getting back to that longer picture, my mother also got married before the Second World War, raised four of us, and my mother's education, which should have led her into archaeology and or art history, which is what she adored, stopped.
Right, and there comes the question and conundrum about how women can balance family, work, and academia.
Yeah.
It's rough. I was born in the early 60s. My mother's generation, she was born in the 40s. She was raised that women were seen and not heard, and that any secondary schooling that you went to, the only reason you went was to get a few secretarial skills or maybe nursing skills, but you were really looking for a husband. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was your economic earning power.
Mm-hmm.
That was how you defined yourself, was that you got just smart enough to get a man or a mate, let's just say that, get a mate, and then they would finance your life. And so when I grew up, I still had that concept in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. And I was coming up through the 70s. I'd never heard of Margaret Fuller. I wish I would have.
I don't think anybody really had heard much about her until the end of the 70s.
Okay. So her name started coming out around then. I was still being shuttled toward the place of your economic earning power is only as valuable as it is for you to capture a man, mm-hmm. and then go from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've struggled in my life to see how to separate my mate relationship from my work and academia and life and earning power relationship. And that's been a tough road for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how to talk to young women about valuing their intellect and their capabilities. What would you say? What would Margaret Fuller say?
Hmm.
I know. I told you I wasn't a hardball interviewer,
yeah.
But that's,
well, there,
that's a big
I think
question.
She made that wonderful statement about women having to teach us to give her the fitting name. So you must not lose sight of that. However, I know that this economic and social and psychological threshold is a difficult one, and that each generation comes upon that very consideration. I don't know, do you have children?
I do not have children. My husband and I decided that children were not in our needs. We work with children,
mm-hmm.
and we teach and mentor children, but we do not have any of our own.
Yeah, well, I think that in a way, what you said earlier about all of us being Margaret Fuller's children extends to you.
Oh.
And I think probably that is also something that this new century has given us women, the right. The Reproduction of Mothering is Nancy Chodorow's book, a very signal book from the 70s, in which she says, women mother because it's always been women who are the mothers. However, in this century, there can be degendered fathers, mothers, mothers, fathers, and both people, in fact, are required in this day to work. So the difficulty of earlier, and including your upbringing, and certainly mine, that you're going to be able to not contribute is over. That's a thing of the past.
All right, everyone, did you just hear that? Judith said, it's just not possible for you not to contribute. Women are here to stay. We have a voice. We are empowered by one another. We are valuable, and we have both mothering capabilities and economic earning power capabilities.
Yes. And I think that each of us, both you and I, are showing that. And I think that your listeners have got to walk away from this interview knowing that that is their obligation as well as a right that has been bestowed on us. It's a good message. And it means that when you go into all of your classes, and it cannot just simply be the humanities, it has to be in whatever field you enter, that you bring just that understanding of contribution with you. That's the whole point of an education. That is exactly where Fuller, Peabody, Child, and Dahl came into this picture. They were such brave women because what they did is define how big the world for women can and should be.
And they didn't make that definition or start their project because they went to school to learn how to do it. Something inside them got lit up, and they just picked it up and ran with it. Mm-hmm. Many of us have heard the term women's intuition. They had an inkling, and they followed it. And now we get to live a legacy and then create another legacy of our own. How do you access your intuition, Judith? I want to hear about that, because we know where Margaret Fuller came from. She really followed it, and no one told her what to do, but she heard a voice somewhere, and she just went with it.
Well, I hear voices. I think probably as a writer, and I've always loved writing, and it's not only simply academic writing. I love keeping a journal, which I recommend everybody who has got an itch in the hand should do that, because you start putting yourself in front of yourself when you use words. And I think that is exactly, for me, why I write. And I also love writing doggerel, which is a form of poetry where you get rhyming things. And I guess intuition and education are almost inseparable. They really are, because you cannot simply say that there is something objective. You can make facts, but how you use them and interpret them is exactly where your intuition comes to play. So I think one of the interesting things about working on that biography of the women, the biography of influence of those women, is really in understanding that they had to do something with that big thing called intuition. And that was, they would not rest until they wrote it down or got up in front of an audience and spoke it. And I think that's one of the good things about being in academe when you've got good teachers. They love that too. A good teacher loves having the stage and having the captive audience, however, not being a complete authoritarian about it, knowing that you're the teacher, but also knowing that your students have got to get into that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So you're pushing them, but you're not dragging them, so to speak.
That's hopeful.
Hopeful.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah.
If you're just tuning in here on Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni on radio.dominican.edu, I'm here in the studio today with my guest, Judith Strong Albert. She's the author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. And we were talking about intuition, and we've talked a little bit about how Margaret Fuller was there in the end of the 19th century, finding herself awakening to who she was as a woman, finding out her purpose, defining her own self, and then bringing women in around her and creating a circle and helping them find their voice as well. But I think what she was doing, this is my assessment from reading the book and listening to you today, she was learning just as much from bringing people into the circle as she was teaching them and asking them to put their voices out there. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really hear about her, you said, until the late 70s.
That's right. She became a part of the feminist avalanche when her essay, The Great Lawsuit, And by the way, I think Fuller would have said, I'm not a feminist. but she really was. And I guess you have to then begin to ask, what is a feminist at this point?
What is your definition of feminism?
It's a woman who has named herself in the way Fuller said women had to do that.
Explain to our listeners what Fuller meant when she said you have to name yourself. What would that mean?
Well,
how would you do that?
It's the last line of this very porridgey long essay, The Great Lawsuit, in which she goes into every possible classical situation so that she shows her own erudition right and left and center. But at the end, what she comes down to is this necessity to find who you are and say who you are to you, whether you say it verbally or write it down or simply intuitively understand that that is who you are. That is what I think Fuller meant by naming. And each of the women in that circle who anticipated the likes of women in the 20th and 21st century saying the very same thing, that is her understanding of what I call feminism and what has been the case for feminism since the late 70s.
So she would not necessarily say, make a large banner and put it up on a wall and name yourself. She is encouraging, and if that's the way you go about it, great. But she's saying, go inside and name yourself and claim yourself.
Yes, and remember that that also ties politically with women getting the vote,
right,
which took forever.
Right.
That whole idea of marching, that women were going to get out and actually be physically and emotionally putting their bodies as well as their minds on the line, so that the getting the vote was a very fundamental thing, although there were women who followed her who said, nonsense, the vote doesn't buy women much. Read Emma Goldman. Emma Goldman was an agitator and a very fascinating woman who came in the sort of 1930s, 40s, actually wrote an essay on woman suffrage and how silly it was.
Oh, no.
But she didn't mean that I think what she meant was that the vote is no better than you are, and that what was wrong was that women were still in bondage to 19th century ideas. So Goldman was saying, if you can't really press yourself into this understanding of what the vote can buy you and what it means, it's not going to buy you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was someone like her, Goldman, who questioned what good the vote was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that ties into several different aspects of stuff, but I'm, you know, wandering between the lines.
No worries. It's all, well, this is a conversation. We're just talking about how women think, how women name themselves, how women stand up for themselves, and it's all intertwined. And one of the things that I've found difficult as a woman is when other women have a negative comment for other women. So, you know, here we are in the time of, you're describing the time of suffrage, but then there's a woman who speaks up and says, I don't know about that. And it makes you shiver a little bit because you would think, oh, wait, shouldn't all women be galvanized together? But there can be this conflict between women. So I think that that's actually good that they're having, it makes you think when someone questions what you're doing. And if you are really holding on to that need and pushing for suffrage, when that person speaks up and goes, really? I think it's silly. You can say, no.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes you stand up for it further.
I think that the ability to argue is a very important one, but you have to have the self-confidence to present.
And women are not necessarily trained for that early on.
They're getting to be more.
Yeah. We women are allowed to speak up, and we're allowed to talk angrily and emote, mm-hmm. right? But it wasn't that way. You're right.
I'm thinking about the whole trajectory of the 20th century on uh-huh. the 21st, and I had a whole bunch of names of wonderful women who have contributed basically to the history.
Oh, let's hear some of those names, just so people can hear them.
Yeah, and I think that if anybody wants to get a bibliography, uh-huh. There's a stunning one in Minerva's Circle. I mean, because it's taken, you know, getting back to that earlier point, 25 years in the making.
Right.
That's because there's a tremendous amount that has accumulated and is there, and you got to face it.
That's right. Yes, this isn't a flash in the pan book. This
hardly.
Was deeply researched, a very extensive bibliography, and well put together. And I did go on to Amazon.com. Your book is available on Amazon.com, so if anyone wants to read it, they can get a copy there, and they'll have access to that bibliography.
There's going to also be a copy of the book in your library here at Dominican.
Fantastic. So if you're a student here, you'll be able to access Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women, here in the Alemany, Bishop Alemany Library at Dominican University.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us some of the names of those women who are making things happen.
Well, it's sort of, for the 20th century, I think this is going to be sort of the bibliography overview. Mary Ritter Beard, in 1946, right at the end of the war, wrote a book called Woman as Force in History. It's very dated because 1946, women were still staying pretty much at home. They had this dilemma that the war had taken them out of the house because they could do some of the skilled stuff that men had been doing and men were fighting. But as soon as the war was over, by God, it was back to the nest. And that sort of put us back into that dilemma that we've been talking about.
Who else?
Eleanor Flexner wrote a book called Century of Struggle, which was published in 1959. But I think the breakthrough that everybody should be aware of who's interested in this trajectory of how women's empowerment has taken time should read Betty Friedan.
I agree with you.
She's really important.
And whether you agree with her or not, I want to say this about that. There are many books that I read that I absolutely don't agree with, but I read them because I need to be informed about them. Mm-hmm. And if there are little bits and pieces of it that I agree with, great. If the whole thing is agreeable to me and I go, yes, 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 at every chapter, fantastic. But there's a spectrum of taking information in. So I wholeheartedly recommend that everyone out there read everything, whether you like it or not. And whether you want to listen to the next presidential debate or not, watch it anyway, just so you can be informed about what is there. Even if you don't understand it, you've at least been exposed to it.
Mm-hmm. It's the mind enlargement that we're talking about. And I think there's a tremendous amount of literature that you can sort of say, okay, or no, I really don't go for that. But I think if you are seeking to understand a full spectrum, to use your word, you're going to dibble and dabble in a lot of different books.
Yes, indeed. Give me one more name on your list, and then I'm going to give you a name on my list, and we're gonna do a DJ Noni thing where we pull our power thought cards.
Okay, I would say there's a book by Gerda Lerner,
okay,
called Why History Matters, which was written in 1997. Lerner is a powerful lady, and she has written about the experience of consciousness, and she has talked a whole lot about feminism and about how women empower themselves. So reading Gerda Lerner is pretty important.
Okay.
I'm staying here within history, the fiction of history is a fiction, because all history is no better than the storyteller. And that kind of understanding, it's a subjective matter, which one other point about sure. biography. When you read a good biography, it's like reading a good story.
Yes.
And I think there are some fine books available to everybody that have to do with the relationship between the biographer and the subject. The biographer has to be a good storyteller. In the past, the biographer was sort of chained to the idea that the fact had to be objective. And I believe...
Right. Objective doesn't necessarily mean it has to be cold.
No, but quite often it means that you're relying on sort of somebody's supposition that the fact is a real fact, mm-hmm. whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And I think if you maintain that women's history is a composite of each woman's history, then taken in the larger human history is a composite of all perspectives. And that includes the educated white woman. It includes every color, every financial and social course. It's all there. So the more you read and the more you talk, the better your grasp of being a human being really is.
Whether you're a woman or a male.
Correct.
Oh. Well, if you're just joining us today, this is DJ Noni. You're listening to Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni on radio.dominican.edu. I'm here in the studio today with my guest, Judith Strong Albert. She's the author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women. And this is a book about Margaret Fuller, who gathered a group of women around her and did some philosophical thinking on the purpose of womanhood and advancing our academic abilities and our economic earning power. And I'm enjoying the conversation today, Judith. It's just delightful to talk with you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed this entire sort of exercise in thinking out loud.
Oh, good. I'm
and
glad.
And that is what I think writing is one thing. It's a solitary kind of thing.
It is.
Talking about it is...
Even better.
Yeah.
Even better. Well, I promise you, I had a woman on my list that I wanted to share with you. So there's a woman that's in the world. Her name is Louise Hay, and she is one of the founders of the self-help movement. And her book, Heal Your Body, was published in 1976, long before it was fashionable to discuss the connection between mind and body. And she has really... set out to empower all human beings, but particularly women. So I think it's fitting that one of the things that I do on my show, Judith, is that I pull a Louise L. Hay power thought card. And what she's done is she has made these affirmation cards. And like you said about Margaret Fuller, who encourages women to name themselves from within side of their psyches in their bodies, Louise L. Hay has made these cards to help us change our self-talk, to know that we can be fulfilled and have what it is that we need and share everything that we have. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to shuffle these cards up, and I'm going to have my guest, Judith Strong Albert, pick one of the cards. So here I go, and I'm fanning
this
them out.
This is the spontaneous moment.
All right, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm also going to pick one, so I'm going to fan them out here. I'm picking mine. All right, Judith, tell me, there's one side has a short phrase and the other has a longer phrase. Read mm-hmm. the side with the short phrase and then flip it over and read the other side.
Okay. There is no blame.
Oh, I like that. What does the other side say?
I release the need to blame anyone, including myself. We are all doing the best we can with the understanding, knowledge, and awareness we have.
Very powerful.
Very.
And if you apply that to womanhood, that if you look at it from a woman's point of view, releasing blame, right? Mm-hmm. Women are meant to be here. We're not just accessories. And we don't have to be blamed for problems. We don't have to be blamed for the ills of the world. Mm-hmm. And what I think about, and that is, you know, the biblical stories of Adam and Eve, where Eve gives the apple. For me, when I hear that story, there's a piece of guilt.
Mm-hmm. I think the blame, including oneself.
Yes.
Because I think that's part of the unfortunate side of the history of women, is to think that somehow you, as a woman, were responsible for whatever.
The decline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think this is a wise woman.
Louise L. Hay is brilliant. Here's my card. Mine says, I accept my uniqueness.
It's and a Margaret Fuller.
Really? That's okay. So we are channeling Margaret Fuller through Louise L. Hay with Judith and DJ Noni. All right. So I accept my uniqueness. There is no competition and no comparison, for we are all different and meant to be that way. I am special and wonderful. I love myself. Would Margaret Fuller be happy?
I think that she would probably wonder at that last, I love myself. But I
really?
Think,
tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that she felt that that might be too simple.
Oh.
Because I think the complexity of the self can be love and hate and a whole mess of different things. So I think she would want to embellish it with more words, more thoughts, more investigation. But I think she would certainly understand the idea of actually loving oneself, because one's self is right there for being loved and giving love.
Mm.
And I think the Fuller understood that.
She would definitely smile at, I accept my uniqueness.
Oh, gosh, yes. And in fact, she would be the first to say, I am unique.
Oh. Well, I think that internalizing these messages is crucial, and then externalizing them by going out and acting on our own behalves and acting on the behalf of other women and pointing in the direction that we can go to really illuminate how powerful women can be in concert with men and the world. And we're talking, like you said, about all races, all colors, all economic, mm-hmm. the span of all economic areas. So we have that power. We have that power.
Mm-hmm. And the women of the world have that power. And some of them more than others have realized how that applies. And I think that we in the United States have a real great need to understand the rest of the world bigger and better than we do, because it is a global village after all.
It
and
certainly
I think
is.
that means also, when you talk about children and you talk about adults and children getting along, that is a very big area, is it not?
It really is. There is a new book out in the world that is about parenting. It is called Bringing Up Bébé.
Mm-hmm.
Bébé meaning baby in French. And it was one American woman's experiences with having children and raising them in France. And mm-hmm. it is her experience of watching women parent their child in another culture and having a comparison. And there are distinct differences in educating your children between Americans and French folk, but you're mothering nonetheless mm-hmm. across the world. It was Pamela Druckerman that wrote that book, a very well-written book. Mm-hmm. And I think that looking at women from all of those perspectives is crucial, and Margaret Fuller would have been asking us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not walking around with our eyes closed.
Oh, don't ever walk with your eyes closed.
All right, we're coming up into the presidential elections. The next debate is Monday, October 22nd. It's at 9 p.m. And Romney and Obama are going to be talking with one another again. We'll see how that shifts our thinking, if it does. I'm encouraging everyone to get out there and vote. No matter who it is that you're voting for, get out there and vote. Margaret Fuller would have been one of the first in the voting booth, right?
Mm-hmm. Very definitely. You're going to have a forum on this campus on Tuesday.
Yes, indeed, we are. And that's going to be very powerful for all of the students here to talk about how they can be involved in politics and how valuable their vote is. Mm-hmm. And every vote counts.
Mm-hmm. Well, every single vote is just that.
One last question before we go. It's a big one. So we don't have 10 hours to answer it. But, Margaret Fuller passed away early. She wasn't a millionaire. She didn't have book deals and celebrity status. We're hearing her voice now, which is wonderful. I would say she was a success in her life. And it sounds like from some of the things that you've written in your book that she also was happy in parts of her life or most of her life because she chose her direction. Judith, how would you define success and happiness, and how does that relate to Margaret Fuller?
Well, I think my own feeling about success is that every good thing that has happened in my life, including my marriage, the children, the career, fitful as it has been in academe, all of it has become me, and I have relished it. So success in living has been my luck, and I think probably that is where I would wish everybody who moves through time, that you have that gauge. It's not necessarily a blind, silly, happy. It has huge waves of experience, and the experience can be both beautiful and sometimes terrible and tragic, and you can have bangs on the head when you don't get the job that you wanted or your whatever. But I think that kind of success with yourself and with everybody who knows you and is around you, that is breeding a good environment for all of us. So it's both sort of inside and outside, a feeling of maybe you didn't accomplish absolutely everything, but you sure gave it a good go, and you have had very, very many feelings of involvement with this planet and with your significance as a human being on it. And that sounds kind of mushy, but it's also true.
I think that is one of the most lovely descriptions, and growing your success and your happiness from the inside out seems to be the message. And Margaret Fuller was really talking about that when she said, name yourself on the inside first, and then everything else comes along with it.
Yes. And I think that each of the other women that we've talked about who are part of that circle found the way in which she could feel successful, and that was not a bed of roses for any of them.
Right.
So
a friend of mine has a picture of what success is in her office, and the picture says, this is what success looks like, and it's, you start at point A, and it shoots up to point B straight with an arrow. And so that's what it looks like from point A to point B, straight and fast. But then the real picture of what success looks like is starting at point A, it goes up a little bit, and then it gets into this squiggly line that goes all over the place, and then it gets to point B, like a long time from them. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. There are the ups and downs.
Yeah, and I guess the title of, Margaret Fuller's Women, Circles of Influence, was just exactly the idea that, in fact, there isn't one straight line. It's a,
right.
It's kind of a confluence of many different things running and moving together.
Lovely. Lovely sentiments. Thank you so much for being here with me today. I really appreciate talking with you and just thinking out loud, like you said. It's good. I think that my thinking will have shifted as of today, and I'll be able to move in different directions based on what I've learned from you.
Well, thank you. And it was sort of a piece of serendip, wasn't it?
I just think it was delightful that we ran into each other and here we sit together.
Thank you. And I really do thank you for this opportunity, because talking about my book is talking about my life, really. Good.
I am so pleased that I have this show, Finding Your Voice, so we can illuminate your creativity and keep you on track with your purpose. And I did find, by the way, the date for our Vote Smart Challenge here at Dominican, and that is this coming October 23rd here in Angelico Hall, and it starts at 10 o'clock. You are listening to Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni on radio.dominican.edu. I would like to thank my guest, Judith Strong Albert, who is an independent scholar, teacher, writer of articles on education and women educators. She has a PhD and is the author of Minerva's Circle, Margaret Fuller's Women, which is available on Amazon.com and will be available here at Dominican University's Alemany Library. Thank you. Thank you, Judith, for joining me today on Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni.
I thank you.
This is Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni on radio.dominican.edu.
Woman, I can hardly express.
That wraps it up for this week's show. I hope what you've heard today has helped you. And as always, feel free to toss what doesn't work and use what you like the best. Remember, no matter where we are on the journey of life, we can
stand tall, it gets a little better. I see the wall that we can break down together. Stand strong, it gets a little better now. We can break it down.
You've been listening to Finding Your Voice on radio.dominican.edu, and this is DJ Noni encouraging you to reach your highest potential. Life? We can do this thing. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll be back with you on Finding Your Voice with DJ Noni next Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. on radio.dominican.edu.
Stand strong, it gets a little better now.